Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on the show today. Ray Dittinger in just a few moments, Merrill Hodge in the final half hour. Looking forward to talking with both of them. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day. Tom Brady at 41 didn't fare well against the Steelers on Sunday, but Vince Carter in the NBA at 41 is still thriving and making plays.
Here comes Brooklyn. Dinwiddie's pass. Intended for Dinwiddie, rather. From Hollis. Jefferson goes awry. Vince. Applause for Vince Carter.
Well, you said it would be nice. He could have dunked early in his game, and there it is.
Vince has been playing well on this trip.
He's still 41 years old, and he still has the ability to dunk and get it done. Vince Carter, 41 years old, playing in the NBA. He's a marvel that people don't talk about, but he is a marvel. There's no question about that. All right. It's the holidays. Here we are a week away from Christmas Day. Maybe you want to pick up a quick gift. We have the perfect quick gift for you. That is the Eagles Encyclopedia, the third edition, and one of the truly greats in the history of writing about pro football. Ray Dittinger joins us now from Philadelphia. Ray, thanks a lot for giving us some time today. I know you're between book signings. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. Yeah, it's pretty... That's really exciting. It's been the book has been really well received. I mean, the Eagles season has been a little up and down, but it hasn't dampened the enthusiasm of the fans here. They the book is called Eagles Encyclopedia Champions Edition, and a lot of it obviously deals with last year and the parade and the celebration and and everything that kind of meant to the fans of the city. So I think that even though the team's struggling to make the playoffs this year, I think everybody kind of wants the book as a keepsake of what was a very special season last year.
Yeah, especially one that ended in February, so it ended in this particular calendar year, so timing is perfect for it. What did you learn as you went through this? Because you've lived a lot of this.
Oh, forever. I mean, I was born in Philadelphia. Yeah. Started going to Eagles games. My first Eagles game was 1956. So back when they were still playing at Connie Mack Stadium. So I've seen them through Connie Mack Stadium and then Franklin Field and then Veterans Stadium and now the Link. So I've been there through the good times and the bad times. And like every other Philadelphian, like every other Eagles fan, just waiting for the time that they would finally get to a Super Bowl and bring a Lombardi Trophy here to Philadelphia. And after a long wait, you just sometimes wonder if it's ever going to happen. But it happened last year, and the thing that was so magical about it was it came out of nowhere. I don't think anybody saw it coming. They knew the team. They felt they had a pretty special young player in Carson Wentz, and they thought they had some pretty good players. But I don't think anybody at the beginning of last season, and certainly by the when Wentz got hurt, I don't think anybody saw this team winning a Super Bowl. But they just got a very, very special role and took them to the championship game, and they wound up knocking off the mighty Patriots, and it's been it's really kind of been one big party here in Philadelphia ever since. I mean, so many people that have been coming to the book signings, that's what they've been saying. I mean, the cover of the book is not a football shot. The cover of the book is actually a shot of the parade in Philadelphia, and so many people have actually come up and had tears in their eyes when they look at that and said, you have no idea what this meant to me and my family. And I said, oh yeah, I do. I've lived the same as you have.
And that's the next question I have for you. There's a section of the book, and in these encyclopedias, they do try to pick out some of the greats of a particular franchise, which you obviously did. In reality, how many of those guys, what percentage did you cover and actually know?
Oh, a lot of them. I mean, I've been covering the team, since 1970, so it's coming up on half a century that I've been around the team. And then, as a fan... a good 15 years before that. And then as things work in the business, obviously, over time, even though I didn't necessarily cover the team of the 50s and the 60s, as a sports writer here in Philadelphia, I had occasion to interview those guys, meet those guys, write pieces about anniversaries of this and anniversaries of that, and, you know, at dinners at the Maxwell Football Club and stuff like that. I got to know all of those guys, even as far back as some of the guys from the 40s. I mean, the Pete Pihoses and Chuck Bednarik and Steve Van Buren. I mean, I knew all of those guys, too. So for 50 years, I've been covering the team pretty much on a daily basis. And over the course of time, I've gotten to know most of the guys all the way back to those first two championship teams in 48, 49.
Okay, so was there anything in doing research for this, was there any surprise to you, or was there something, you know what, I had forgotten about that, and you needed to write more about it?
Actually, yes. That happened. I had done two previous editions. We did one in 2005, right after they went to the Super Bowl in Jacksonville, the one they lost to the Patriots. We did the first edition of Eagles Encyclopedia then. Then we did another one in 2012, which was really updating the original book, and that was after the first year of Chip Kelly. And last year, when about mid-season, when the team was really playing well, really well, I talked to the folks at Temple University Press, who are our publisher, and I said, you know, we've kind of talked about the fact that we might redo this book if they actually won a Super Bowl. And they're starting to take the look of the team that might actually do that. So I'll tell you what, on your end, from the production end, you guys start trying to, you know, put things in place. I'll start gathering the material and the research so that if they actually do win this thing in February, then we'll be able to hit the ground running and have a book out in the fall. So that's what we were doing. And one of the things I did was I went back and looked at the last edition and went through it page by page and just said, okay, if I really do this book for a third time, what's missing here and what should I update? When I went from edition one to edition two, one of the things that I saw that I said, you know, I really need to do this in another book was do a whole chapter just on the Eagles-Cowboys rivalry.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a ton of Eagles-Cowboys stuff in the book, but I just felt that there needed to be a whole chapter that just dealt with the rivalry of between those two teams, how it all started, all the funny anecdotes over the years of things that have happened back and forth. So I added that to the second edition. But now this time coming around, it was the same sort of thing where I went back and said, okay, let me see what's missing here. And what I felt was missing was a couple of profiles. I have a whole chapter there that's called Player Profiles, which are individual portraits of players. And I felt that there was – I was sort of kicking myself after the second one that I didn't do a profile of John Dornbos, the long snapper and magician. Because I just thought, not that he's one of the 100 greatest players in Eagles history, but his story is so unique. So I was sort of mad at myself that I didn't include him. So now in this book, I had an opportunity to include him, and also to the chapter that deals with owners, coaches, and front office people. I wanted to add a profile of Otho Davis, the guy that was the trainer here for 35 years, because there were so many great Otho Davis stories that I kind of felt like he needed to be a character in the book. So I was able to add those things and sort of complete those chapters, and then obviously then add the whole story of last season with the whole regular season, then the postseason, then Philly special, then the parade. So I was able to add all that, and so there's a real feeling of completeness about the book now.
See, when you're talking about a guy that's a trainer for 35 years, he's a character in his own right. But he knows everything.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah, nobody knows more of what's going on within a team than the trainer. The trainer sees everything and hears everything. You know, the good trainers don't tell you anything. It just stays in house. But they are privy to everything that's going on. You're right.
Yeah. I know that when the Eagles won, there'd be an outpouring. That'd be similar to when the Red Sox won in 2004. Have you, even you, been taken aback by the emotion? Is it even higher than even you thought it might be from fans?
Somewhat. I mean, I expected it to be huge. I expected it to be an enormous outpouring. I mean, I'd been through it before. I'd seen covered the Flyers' two Stanley Cups in the 70s and those parades. I covered the Sixers championship with Dr. J and Moses Malone in that parade. The two Phillies World Series wins. And they were all big and they were all memorable. But I always felt that if the Eagles ever won, if the Eagles ever won a Super Bowl, it would be the celebration that would top them all. And it did. It really did. I think that there's there was just I mean, the whole city was just on standing on its head for the better part of a month, and still is to some degree. But I think that I really do think Philadelphia is. I mean, it's a cliche, but I really do think it is a football town.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, they love all the teams, and they're a real passionate sports community. But I really do think the team and the sport that rises above everything else is the Eagles, and it is pro football. And so that was the one championship that everybody was waiting for. That was the one parade that everybody was waiting for. And I knew that when it happened, it was going to be special, and it was. But the thing that I think that took it a little bit beyond everything else was the personal stories that were attached to it. Because everybody, and I've talked to thousands of people since the Eagles won the thing, and I felt like I talked to a million people the day of the parade, and everybody at the parade had a story. Everybody talked about. You know, they either watched the game with their grandfather, or they watched the game with their father or their brother, or they thought about their father. They took his picture down off the shelf and they put it on the television for luck. And there were all of these stories that went way, way beyond just football. You know, and it just sort of bound these whole families together, this whole community. In a way, I mean, people rooted for the Phillies and they rooted for the Flyers and the Sixers, but
sure.
I think pro football, and I think the Eagles in particular, it's such a collective thing, because nobody watches the Eagles game alone. I mean, everybody watches that Sunday. It's everybody, the whole family gathers around, and it's something they all share. And so this was the day they were all waiting for, and when it came, I mean, it was something they all celebrated as family and as community.
Each team has its own characters that you can build the story around to then tell the story to the fan. In last season, what particular players to you were important that really helped you tell the story better?
Well, I think Foles for sure.
Sure.
I think Foles was the best story to come out of this. I mean, he was the perfect story. I mean, it was like a character. It was like a movie that you had this guy who had originally been drafted by the team, had played, had a great year, historic year.
He had a Pro Bowl year.
Had a tremendous year. I mean, he had the highest quarterback rating in football,
yeah.
27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Goes to the
yeah.
Pro Bowl. He's the MVP in the Pro Bowl. Then
yeah.
he goes back the next year, gets hurt, and basically gets forgotten. Gets traded away to the Rams, has a horrible experience in the Rams, to the point where he wants to quit football. Then finally decides, you know, I'm not really ready to quit right now. His wife talks him into giving it another try. His original coach, Andy Reid, brings him in to Kansas City, kind of rebuilds his confidence. Then he leaves there and comes back to Philadelphia as the backup, clearly the backup to Wentz, no expectation of really playing. And then the Eagles are having this magnificent season, all of a sudden Wentz gets hurt and he gets thrust in there as the guy that has to pick it up and move it forward. And not only does he do that, but he succeeds beyond everyone's expectations. It's not like he just became a caretaker there. I mean, he comes in and becomes the MVP of the Super Bowl. So, and handled it with such amazing grace. That was the thing. I mean, it was just he was so in the moment. He was so he said not only did he do all the right things on the field, but he said all the right things off the field. And was 100% supportive of Wentz and fully understood that he was the backup. And I mean, if he was asked once, he was asked 1,000 times over the postseason and Super Bowl week about, well, what happens when Carson Wentz comes back next year? And he said, no, he's the quarterback. I get it. I'm the backup. This is his team. And he never once hedged. He never once – you know, people always said you're going to have a quarterback controversy. No, you're not. Because he's not going to allow it to happen. And I just thought – for a guy to come from where he came from and overcame so much doubt, because when Wentz got hurt and Foles stepped in, it was widely written and said, "Oh, they're done." You know, that's a shame. That team, that they had a chance, but they have no chance now. Not with this guy. I mean, that was said 100 times over. Yep. And so Foles in the whole postseason, and certainly after the Super Bowl, had every opportunity to stand up at the podium and say, yeah, see, none of you ever believed in me. Well, do you believe in me now? I mean, he could have said that, and who could have challenged it? But he never did, which spoke volumes about his character, and it spoke volumes about what a real teammate he was. And so, there were thousands of great stories on that team. I mean, going from the coach, for heaven's sakes, the guy that was coaching high school football 5 years ago, now he's beating Bill Belichick in a Super Bowl. I mean, there were so many great stories on that team. But the one that rose above them all, obviously, was Nick Foles. I mean, he was in many ways that team's Rocky Balboa.
Well, no one couldn't pick anybody to tell the story better than you, all the way through all the stories. And it's the third edition. And then for any Eagle fan out there, this is your holiday gift. Go get it. Ray, thanks so much. I can't thank you enough for giving us the time today, because I know you're between appearances.
Hey, that's fine, Steve. It was a real pleasure, and I'm Dick Girardi and I go way back together. So Dick Girardi to me is one of the all time great writer. He's a terrific broadcaster, but more than that, he is just fun to hang out with. So you probably see more DJ than I do. So tell him I said hello.
Oh, I absolutely will. We've got a game coming up tomorrow, as a matter of fact. And that's where, you look at your life, Ray, and you say to yourself, how fortunate am I? I get to work with Jack Ham on Saturdays and Dick Girardi in the winter. How fortunate am I?
Dobra Shunka. I remember the Dobra Shunka days at Old Three Rivers Stadium. Boy, what a player he was.
Oh, and you know what? And you work a game broadcast with him, he sees the entire field, Ray, the way he did as a player.
Yeah, he was real special that way. That was, that Steelers team, that Steelers defense, I mean, they had greatness everywhere you looked, starting with Joe Green and then obviously Mel Blunt and Lambert in the middle. But they would have never been the same if they didn't have 59. I mean, he was really a special player. I mean, he saw the game at a level way beyond the average person, and it's... He was a great, great player. Great player.
Yep. And I get that. I get spoiled by that every Saturday in the fall. Thank you so much, Ray. Appreciate it. I'll tell DJ you said hi, because he also spoils me all winter long, too, with basketball analysis.
That's awesome. Well, you please tell him that, and it was a real pleasure, Steve.
Yeah. And by the way, and also, if you need a horse...
I'll look you up on that.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it, Ray. Good luck with this, because I know it's already a number one Amazon bestseller. So thanks so much.
Thank you. See you now. Bye-bye.
It's the third edition of the Eagles Encyclopedia. And, of course, it's the one that includes all the great Super Bowl memories of their first ever Super Bowl. I mean, that's what's going to make this so popular during the course of this holiday season. People are going to either want the gift for themselves, or they'll ask for it, or somebody will say, you know what? They'd love to have it. I'm going to get it for them. It's an exciting time. It's why on Amazon right now, it's been number one. Of course, the Eagles coming off that great win on Sunday night, where they put themselves right back into the playoff race with a brilliant 30-23 win over the LA Rams. And it was a brilliant performance by Philadelphia. I know the Rams have been slumping offensively, but you watch what they did. I mean, what Jim Schwartz did defensively, to make the Rams won a quick strike, big play, big play, big play. And what Schwartz made them do is he made the Rams do something they don't like to do, and that's be patient. And then you run out of field, and so does your patience. Then Nick Foles stepped in and played really well once again. Nick Foles just, that's as good a backup quarterback as anybody's going to have in the NFL. Nobody's going to have a better backup quarterback than the Eagles will. And he just steps in there as if he's been playing all year, played really well once again. It's great. All right, tomorrow's signing day for college football. It's a big day. So we'll have complete coverage of it for you tomorrow. We're looking forward to it. Penn State will sign another top class. And then... not only will be another top class being signed, but I think they anticipate a lot, that several members of that class could be double digits, maybe early entries. So we'll have complete coverage of that tomorrow when we do the show from Pittsburgh tomorrow. And Then we'll go to Tuscaloosa on Thursday and Friday because it's a basketball road trip this week. It's another extended trip. This is, what, my third extended trip in the past month? Third extended trip in the past 5 weeks, and then I got one more extended trip, obviously, right around the bowl time where I've got to go to Orlando and then Detroit because I got basketball at Michigan right after the bowl game with Kentucky at the Citrus Bowl. So some extended trips coming up. That's fine. Believe me, I'm the one that has the fun job. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. One final half hour to go. We'll hear from Merrill Hodge. Talk about his book, dealing with CTE, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The book is entitled Brainwashed. The author, Merrill Hodge. Merrill, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Good talking to you, Steve. Happy to be on there, buddy.
All right. So, look, there are certain assumptions that are made, and once a narrative is established, it is very difficult to buck the narrative. Do you consider that a fair statement? And if so, how does it apply to the argument on CTE?
You mean the narrative that's already been established?
Yes.
Well, there's no doubt. And that's one of the real issues with this particular subject, you know. Just to share you a quick story and making this real quick, I've done a lot of media. I've had literally people from the media call me and start right off the bat and say, I cannot believe you don't believe in CTE. How can you tell me concussions don't cause CTE? And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. Have you read the book? No. I'm like, well,
right.
I know how you called to discuss the book because all those questions are answered in the book. So let me start with how this book came about. I really came from a parent perspective. Regardless of all the things I've done, I'm a parent. My son started playing at age 7. He's a quarterback at BYU. Just had surgery today on his toe. I've seen the headlines. I was like, okay, what is it? And I have a life philosophy to find a way. Actually, I wrote a book on that, and it's always give me action, inspired action to do something about it, find answers, find the people. Well, I went across the country, even into Canada. I met with neuropathologist after neuropathologist. I cut brains with them. I sat there. I did it myself. I asked questions, and I asked that one question, what is CTE? Universally, this is exactly what they would say to me. They say, Merrill, CTE is a pattern in an observation state. We don't know what causes it, and we don't know what causes it causes. We have cases where they played football and had concussions. We have cases where they played sports and had no concussions, and we have cases where they never played football, they never played sports, and they have no history of head trauma. And I'm like, well, why do we only hear about the football ones then? They would say this, the experts, the neuropathologists, exactly right. The science community is disturbed that it has gotten this far. We shake our heads. We are observing this. We have no idea. And I was like, then there's a litany of things from that, how the narrative has gone so far. You just use the media, for example, they talk, just I told you the stories, they call me up and they tell me, for fact. In fact, one guy was going to send me the science papers, believe it or not, to prove he was right, that concussions cause CTE. I said, just so you know, you're the only guy in the history of this planet that has that science, so you know. So please send it. I'm looking forward to reading those papers. I've read all the papers. I've had them explain to me. Now, to his credit, he calls me, emailed me back a day later. He said, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. But for years, this guy has been printing that and saying that.
Right.
And that's why the book became so important, because we explained the steps of science, standards of science, how incomplete the science work is at this time, the true definition of where they are versus what you see in the media. But then all of the good things that are going on in sports, the things that if parents knew about, how exciting it was, from protocols to treatments and therapies, if your son or daughter had a concussion. And it's not just in an athletic arena. I tell people all the time, my son had his first concussion his freshman year, 4 days before their first bowl game. He slipped in the shower. So it can happen anywhere in any virus. So wouldn't it be better to know how to handle head trauma, the treatments and therapies that are there for it, and the real truth of the science? Now, you do with what you want, but at least I've done a lot of the work to help you understand it, and it'll help empower you. And then you use the information, what works best for you, your family, your choices, and how you want to use it for activities.
I mean, I'll give you one that is a fact, and I've used it on the show a couple of times. There are actually, quote, more head injuries playing soccer than there are playing football. Yet football is always the focal point of this. And how much does that bother you that football is always the focal point?
Well, another reason I wrote the book, because we actually break that down, too, and explain all of the concussions in all the activities, not even in sports. I mean, just all activities, trampoline. Sure. We could start going on and on with stuff. I just got off a call today, and this guy probably put it best. He was a reporter. He's done a lot of research on the rehab centers across this country with concussions, across the country, okay? He said he's asked everybody, if football were to be abolished today, no football at any level, he's like, what would that do to your concussion clinic? All of them said, at a majority of their, basically said, it would affect us, it would only affect us 10%. Meaning, it's only 10% of their work is from football.
Yeah. Football.
The other 90% is from all other activities and other sports. Wheeled sports, bicycles, roller coasters, I mean, the trampolines, basketball, soccer, lacrosse, I mean, the whole litany of other sports. But I was like, wow, 10%. Even that kind of guy was like, wow. He goes, it would not affect us at all. He goes, there's 10% of what we see is football related from head trauma.
You did a lot of research on this. Not a little. I mean, a lot. I mean, I'm sitting there, I'm reading this, I'm going through this book, right? And Jack Ham, by the way, is going to borrow the book for me, too. So it's that. I'm interested to see what Jack says when he's done reading it. But when I look at it, the Boston University work has essentially, and if I'm using the wrong word here, let me know, it seems like the BU work has been considered gospel on this. Has it been tough to break through gospel when talking to people because of the BU studies are given such credence?
Well, first of all, you're right. And it's always tough to break through something like that unless you have the one thing that matters. You have the truth. And you have the power of that. You have the scientific evidence of that. The one thing I think people need to understand, like, the science papers out there, everybody uses. You know, it isn't like, you know, Dr. Cummings and I have our own science papers, and it's our science papers against BU science papers. No, it's all the papers. Mayo Clinic, Vanderbilt, I mean, not just BU's that nobody gets to see. There's voices out there screaming, slow down. This has gone out of control, but nobody wants to hear those. Nobody listened to them. That's why I wrote the book, too. I put it all in there. I got a website, brainwashbook.com. The science papers are there. So it isn't like I'm saying, hey, take my word for it. I want you to educate yourself and empower yourself. Read the papers. Read some of read the disclaimers on them, or the conclusions at the end. There's literally these words in there. Caution. You can't use this to gauge disease of any kind. Okay, I'm kind of paraphrasing there, but the caution word is in there, that you can't use this, is in there. and you can't use this to measure level of disease, like in age of exposure. That's literally in the papers. And then the same people who write the player or write the paper are in the media, and they contradict what they wrote in the science paper. And it's just like, that stuff was just so disturbing to me. It's abuse of the Hippocratic Oath they signed, quite honestly, that you wrote the paper, you know that you got bullet holes all over the place. You even wrote the word caution, or can't use this, and then you present it as fact. And that's where we've gone wrong. That's why we wrote the book. And we do that, too. We help you understand that in there, the difference between what you've seen in the media versus what really is in the science work.
I mean, you and I are both big believers in what football can do for you, attitude-wise, discipline-wise, athletically. There's a long list of reasons why football is really good. You have invested a lot of time in youth football. Merrill, what are the importances of, A, teaching the game right, and in your experience, what's a good time to then you start thinking about allowing young people to have contact playing the game in terms of, okay, instead of flag football, now you're going to have contact playing it?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm going to use my own experience and how I did it. I'm not going to ever tell anybody how to do it, because I don't think anybody should do that on both sides of the fence. Kids, you're going to let your kid play tackle football, nobody should question that. And if right. they do, they're uninformed and ignorant and don't know the facts. The science, there's no scientific evidence that playing contact football at a young age from 7 to 11 has harmed any child later in life. There's no scientific evidence of that. And the papers are in there, actually, in the website and the book, and we talk about that. Now, that being said, that's what we're doing today, and actually has gotten misunderstood. We've created so many options in football, from tackle, flex, flag, 7-on-7. We've done this for a reason, to help. Each kid might have a different entry level. I can coach youth football for a long time. Been coaching camp since 1991. Started coaching my son in 2003 as a youth football coach. Is there a couple kids that I go back and look at? Hey, they could have started with flag for a couple years and then went into tackle. And then there's a majority. My son would be that one of those kids. He just wanted to play tackle. He was meant to play tackle football, and he started at age 7. And I'm like, I start thinking, to have robbed my son of that opportunity, the things that he's learned, that I've been able to teach young kids. Listen, I have a coaching philosophy. We coach our kids in the yardsticks of their years and not ours. I tell my coaches that right off the bat. Here's what's going to give you patience and perspective. Okay, we're 38. Okay, they're 8. Let's not forget that, okay? When we tell them something and they forget it 2 seconds later, they're 8. They're not 38. They're going to do that. When they go home and they're worried about playing and pizza and having a good time, they come back and they've forgotten everything we talked about, they're 8. And if we teach like that, A, it helps us. But the things we get to teach from it, the life lessons, you know, people talk about, you know.
Right.
When you don't quit in life, how do you teach that? What environment do you ever have? I mean, sports is a great environment for that. Let me just tell you this. On this quest, had I found out otherwise with this disease, with the pattern of CTE, what they see from the scientists and the neuropathologists across this country and in Canada, had I thought for 1 second my son was in jeopardy, my son wouldn't be playing football.
Same here.
I am not. And I was not. I was. And I, you know, somebody asked me this the other day, and I thought it was a fabulous question. I'd never really thought about it. They said, when you started this, did you expect it to end like this? And I was like, you know, I didn't know what to expect, which is kind of interesting. I didn't. I just wanted to know the truth. Was I shocked that the science world is saying, I mean, are you kidding me? We are observing. We have no idea what causes it. But we have cases outside of sports. And more showing up across the UK, in Australia, and the United States itself, and in Canada, all of these cases where nobody's even part of sports, never played football, never had a concussion. I've had neuropathologists go, you know, we're looking in the wrong place, you know, and really this could be nothing. But I'm like, we don't know. And I keep going back to, when you don't know, you don't know. So why can you say anything more than that? You just don't know.
Well, and part of it is you don't know because it can't properly be diagnosed until after death. Dave Duerson, Junior Seau. For goodness sakes, I mean, I've known Larry Johnson because Larry Johnson went to stay at High here, and then I announced his games here at Penn State. He's assuming he has it, or at least the symptoms of it, and that's you can't tell at this stage.
Well, see, there's a bunch of harmful things said right there. I mean, Larry Johnson, I think he's already diagnosed with bipolar or something. Now, for him to self-diagnose himself and talk about symptoms, I'm going to go back to what they said. They don't know what causes it, and they don't know what it causes. So nobody knows that there's any symptoms from this, and nobody knows what those would be. Okay, so we can't even see people speculate that, but we do. We put them on Good Morning America, and we run that title on there. Well, what are people going to think? You got people self-diagnose themselves. Here's what a neuropathologist said to one time when I asked him specific questions about stuff like that. She looked at me, and she said, let me tell you something. Alzheimer's, we've been working on for decades. Hundreds and hundreds of doctors are working on it and collaborating on it. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of papers have been written on it, clinics done on it. Thousands of brains have been looked at, and we don't know what causes that. How are you going to tell me one paper and one research thing is going to give you any answers? She looked at me, she goes, it's a pinprick as far as starting. And I was just like, wow. I mean, I'm like, but then that's really what kind of really disturbed me. It's like, you know, people are running around scared to death, and the mom or the dad that don't know, haven't lived where I've lived, know what I know. I mean, I don't blame them for seeing stuff in the headlines and saying, my kid's not going to play. And I'm scared to death. I love my kids without end. I'm all in line with that. That's why I was so passionate about writing this book. I couldn't write it fast enough, but it is studious. It takes so much time. And to finally get it out, to have the information that I was taking years to figure out and put together to help people with that decision, I'm proud of that. I'm happy about that. And I'm happy for all the doctors that helped me because I couldn't have done it without them.
Yeah, you should be. And I lost my father to Alzheimer's, so everything you just said was gospel about it. I mean, nobody knows, and millions have been invested in it. You learned a lot in doing this. Okay, how important was it for you to absorb the information and not have preconceived thoughts about it and then have the information form your thought?
Well, I think that was vital at the very beginning. You know, listen, there's nothing I can do about my career. My career is over, you know.
Right.
And I was thinking about, you know, my son. I was like, well, shoot, man. I mean, he's not really at the age I can tell him to quit playing. You know, he's not a kid anymore. But I've always thought, and here's what I think we need to get at, especially if you're somebody, regardless of what you heard right now, there'll still be people going, he doesn't believe in CT, even though I've already told you what it is. I haven't even explained what it is. And they go, he doesn't believe concussions cause CT. Again, there's no scientific evidence of that. I've asked doctors. I've had them explain papers to me. Going in with an open mind with, listen, I just want to know the truth. I'm telling you, that cleared me of everything. I was just like, let it come to me. Just let me. I didn't use just Dr. Cummings. I mean, he's a brilliant dude. However, I mean, from Julian Bell's, Lizzie Hazarati up in Canada, I mean, and literally cutting brains and look and listening and watching, and everybody kind of starts repeating the same thing. I'm like, okay, this is not an accident. You know, people don't even know I talk to, say, Lily. Nobody knows I talk to Peter. You know, these are people, neuropathologists, just sharing what the real truth is to me. And that just gave me real comfort, too, that I knew I was on the right path. Then the science papers, like I said, everybody's using the same science papers. How people interpret them the way they do in the media is really evil and wrong. But that's why I put them on the website. Read them. Go through them. Read all the stuff in there. And then you just take the information and use it how you want to, but I've always thought it's best to have all the information to help us make choices versus, you know, something out of fear that you see in a headline.
Yeah, finally, because I know I have to let you go, but Dr. Margo Patukian, who's at Princeton now, had been one of the team doctors here at Penn State, and she was our team doctor for basketball. So 25 years ago, she'd be talking about concussions and the susceptibility to another one. So she and others have done a great job of just advancing to making sure that there's more knowledge and everyone's more intelligent about it, which goes back to one of the stories you tell in the book about you missing the last preseason game. The Bears are going to play the Buccaneers to open the season. You have a splitting headache. And on the phone, the general practitioner says, how are you feeling? I'm fine. Okay, you're cleared.
Yeah. See, that, you know, what you're talking about is a protocol. And you got to realize the Steelers are doing cognitive testing in 1991, okay?
Yep.
That's before anybody in the professional world, actually in the neuropathology world in this country, knew anything about another tool for head trauma. Just, that's a real honest perspective people have to remember, okay? Nobody knew about it. Nobody in professional sports. The Steelers, even though they were doing it, because Chuck Noll challenges Joe Maroon and then Dr. Lovell gets involved, they don't even really know why they're doing it other than to please Chuck Noll to create a subjective and objective information when somebody had a concussion. So think of that in 1991, but now where we are today, the protocols and treatments and therapies, that's why protocol that we have available now should be everywhere in all sports, and it needs to be applicable, okay?
Yep.
Just because we have it doesn't mean people are doing it. That's the thing that's most important. That's why I went to Congress in 2009 and pleaded for them. We're doing nothing for 99% of the football players. I was specific to football when I was there, which is 8 to 18. Okay, we're doing stuff for the NCAA and the NFL. 99% of our players are 8 to 18. Let's establish a protocol now. And that protocol was any type of sign of head trauma, they got removed and they could not return to whatever event they were a part of. And then they couldn't play the next week. So it gave them a two-week window to help the brain, because we knew that even though you might still start feeling better, you still, the best chance of you returning was a two-week window. That's where neuropathologists felt it was best. Now, keep in mind, that's 2009, too. That's almost a decade later. The treatments and therapies that are available, the improved protocols, I mean, this is the safest environment we've ever had in the history of sports.
Yes.
If you picked an era, you wouldn't want to play in the era where you had a strap in your helmet and you didn't drink water or you're considered soft and you did nothing for head trauma. You'd want to play now.
Yes.
And unfortunately, that message has gotten lost, and hopefully the book will give you the information to at least let you know how to handle head trauma if it ever happens, know the treatments and therapies, and keep in mind Western Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, some of the best resources in the country, although there's good ones all over the place. I'm sure that up in Penn State area, you guys have them too. And we need the parents to know about those so they can get their kids help if they do have a concussion and they're having symptoms afterwards.
I thought this was fascinating. I couldn't put it down. It was really well-researched, and it is an important read. I hope you don't mind me saying that. It was an important read. Thank you so much for A, writing it, and B, for being on the show to talk about it.
My pleasure, brother. Thanks, Steve.
Merrill Hodge, important topic. Great to have him on the show. All right, coming up tonight, Santa Claus, Magic Radio, 6 to 7. Looking forward to that. Then tomorrow we'll talk a lot about National Reverend Ted Day for college football, the early signing period. It's all coming up tomorrow. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.